Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Memorial Day edition 2014 of Warrior Connection. Well, we're going to talk about the VA. We're going to talk about the health problems of Gulf War vets, Desert Storm, all those individuals. There's 600 and some thousand guys, 500 and some, a little or 500,000 left alive, and all the medical problems they have and what's happened over the years. It's turned into an absolute nightmare. Well, tonight, again, who are co-hosts, Patricia Axelrod, director of the Desert Storm Think Tank, and Denise Nichols, and whoever else calls in. Join us, everybody, at 888-874-4888. Well, this has been a nightmare, and both Denise and Patricia, you were in at the beginning in all the hearings when they started way back in, 93?
Well, I was in earlier than that, actually. I came in, I tell you something, I came into this in at the beginning of Desert Storm, and I had a woman come from a VA in Georgia. She was already receiving, actually it was right as Desert Storm was ending. This is Patricia Axelrod, by the way, the Desert Storm think tank and all veterans advocate. And I want to give out my number in case anybody needs me. Please feel free to call me. It's 775-412-5980. 775-412-5980. Let me tell you, while you two were still fighting the war, I was already beginning to fight the use of experimental vaccinations. I had learned of Ralph Nader, who had begun to challenge the use of those vaccinations, and I had already begun to fight the use of those vaccinations. And as I started to say, I had a woman travel from a VA from Georgia. I was living in Tacoma Park, Washington at the time. She came to me. She had been in the VA for many years. And she told me to expect worse than what had happened with Agent Orange. She told me there had been a young man who had developed headaches and actually a tumor in the theater. Just that rapidly, he had developed illness, and he had been shipped out to a VA hospital, and by the time he received treatment, the tumor was as large as a grapefruit, and he died. And she came to me, and she told me to expect the very, very worst, and I began to examine what I was then called Desert Storm Syndrome, and now it's become Persian Gulf War illness, and I began identifying all of the factors. And then I met, actually contacted the National Institute of Health. A woman there by the name of Rosemary Torres was in charge of women's health and minority health issues. And I contacted her, and I explained to her what was going on and that there were multiple factors that were going to be contributing to Desert Storm Syndrome. And she invited me to write a paper for the NIH using the resources of the NIH, the database of the NIH, to use and to conduct a literature review, which I did. And she was to submit that to the NIH for review, for peer review. I completed that. I submitted it for peer review to the National Institute of Health, and I was then told to take the name of the National Institute of Health off of the paper, and that was in 1992. That's how far back I go.
Yeah, Denise, when did you come into this? Well, obviously, you were in the front line as a medevac nurse,
right,
running the medevac at Log Base Charlie, where the MSR and all that stuff and everybody came back.
You had problems
in war, then what happened?
I got involved when I got home, looking at what was happening, not so much to myself, but others that were worse. And let's see, in 93, November of 93 was the first hearings that we had on this Hill for Gulf War illness, November of 93.
Was it the National Institute of Health hearing you're talking about?
No, this was one of the first hearings, and it was November 1993. And I know of Tim Stridley that went up there to testify, and multiple others. In fact, had to reach out to every organization I knew to get them help to get up there.
That was in Bethesda, wasn't it? Maryland?
This was the first hearing on the Hill.
And right.
It was a Senate hearing in 1993, November. The NIH conference on the health consequences of the Gulf War occurred in April of 94.
Are you talking about the Rigel hearings, Chair?
What?
The Rigel hearings?
Okay, that was after that. Rockefeller's hearing was a week and a half later, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rigel's hearings were May 24th, 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had met a lot of the vets at the NIH meeting. We had those that were close in Pennsylvania, Ohio, that could come in for Rockefeller's hearing. And we lined them up to be sure they were going to get there. And
mm-hmm.
then the rest of us decided to come for Senator Rigel's hearing. So that was the beginning of it all, was 1993 November hearings with, I believe it was the Senate Veterans Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And then following that was the Persian Gulf War health effects at the NIH. And then, you know, 94, we had those hearings. And then, you know, all through the 90s, we had investigations, hearings.
Presidential Advisory Committee meetings,
yeah.
You name it, right.
The Presidential Oversight Board, we've had so much go on. We had the town hall meetings with the Osagwu team going all over the country. We warned vets to be sure to have copies of everything that was in their records before that happened, because we knew what was going to happen. After each of those meetings, we would be contacted by vets saying, hey, I had something in my records and it's gone now. So I think part of the effort of the Osagwu team was to go into each base and find out whatever documentation was there and scrub it, basically
mm-hmm.
scrub it. We, you know, like I said, a lot of the activity was in the 90s. We got the Presidential Advisory Committee. We get the Presidential Special Oversight Board. We had the Osagwu team running around. We had hearings and investigations going on. We were doing pretty well getting
researching
access.
Researching it. We've
but
been
I think
researching
what,
it.
What happened was when 9/11 happened, it was like everybody went quiet. I'm not sure why that happened, but we should have been really raising our voices strongly then. As I was told by Vietnam vets when we first got going in the early 90s, was if there's another war, Denise, don't let the voices go quiet. That's when you need to push. Because from their experience, their Agent Orange bill actually was legislated in 1991 when we were still over in theater. So that was their word of the wise to me early on. Listen, before we get carried away, I have notified a lot of people to get online and talk about the scandal at the VA and how it's affecting Gulf War vets in particular. So I want to be sure we, you know, get those people in if they've called in, Doug.
Has anybody else?
May I interject
Patricia,
something?
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Has anybody called in yet? Anybody on? Ladies and gentlemen, anybody there, speak up, please.
Apparently
not. We don't know if you're there or not, so you have to speak up when you come online. But the number to call is 888-874-4888. Now, at the earliest time within the military, because I didn't come out until I met Denise and Patricia, and that was in 97 or 98. But deep within the military, what had happened, the first major conference was the Health and Environmental Effects of Desert Storm, and that was held at the 330th Medical Grade in Fort Sheridan in Illinois. And that was in September of 1992. And MedCom called all the experts, all of the Bowers Raiders, everybody together at Fort Sheridan, went over everything that we knew, what had happened, how it had happened, what the health effects were. And that covered all the whole mess, because it's never been a single item. It's been all this stuff in a synergistic relationship. Well, we did that in September of 1992. Obviously, that was made a classified conference right away. And what's real funny is that after Osegwe came on with Mikey Kilpatrick and Bernie Rosker, they went after all of those documents and all the minutes of that meeting like gangbusters.
Why don't you tell them what a SWAGE is? That's an acronym. Tell them what it is.
Well, it's the Office of Special Assistance for Investigation of Gulf War Illness, and it was headed up by Dr. Bernard Rosker and Dr. Mikey Kilpatrick. And then there were a whole bunch of other individuals. General Jeff Prather was in there. Dave Case was in there. A whole bunch of individuals.
Doug, what's important to mention, if people do not know, Dr. Bernard Rosker was a Ph.D. in economics.
He was brought in because of the economics from day one. This was all a concern over the economics and the dollars because of the cost just for treating the incredible proportions of U.S. military casualties, which then led to treating all the coalition casualties, which under the Geneva Convention went to treating all of the so-called enemy casualties and all the non-combatants and all the spouses that have got sick as a result of the cross-contamination. So Bernie Rosker was terrified, as Chu was, who was the budget guy up there in DOD, about the cost of it. So we had this first major conference. Osegwe didn't exist. This was in September of 1992 because we knew we had a mass. September of 1991. And then what we had, the next one was I got recalled to active duty, and this was a special medical conference at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio. And again, that's where the Air Force Museum was, and it was likely to be there and everything. And this was called by the Secretariat, at that time the Secretary of Defense. We had the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of the Army, all of them were there. All the big honchos were there. And at Wright-Patterson, this was looking at the health effects and environmental effects of the war. And at this time, we worked specifically, and what they brought up specifically, which is the oil well fires, which God bless him in his angel day, Andres Carnegie, Bob, you know, and everything. He was the guy that won there. Jim Runge, God bless him. These guys gone to heaven. We think Tom Little is gone, but it was the three of those, along with Herb Smith, that did the oil well investigations. Flat out did it in theater, and I distinctly remember, Denise, you were there when we had the Center for Disease Control Conference in the end of February, early March of 1999. The Army with Kilpatrick got up there lying through their teeth, and then they didn't know Honoris was going to be there, and he got up there and said, here's your original reports, here's your original documents. I did it. And, man, you talk about blowing them out of the water. So we had that. You know, all this stuff kept coming out, and more and more and more. When Osegwe was formed, I was on active duty down at Fort McClellan as the director of the U.S. Army Depleted Radium Project. Again, recalled to active duty after we briefed General Shinseki, who issued the orders mandating medical care for everybody in August of 1993.
Explain about that, dear, because that's an extremely interesting point for you listeners. Now, remember, everyone, Eric Shinseki is the man who's in the hot seat right now, and he's the one who's gone on to become the secretary of the VA, and Doug has this very special insight into him. Now, bear in mind that our veterans are dying as a consequence of exposure to that which is euphemistically called depleted uranium, something I would prefer to call radioactive weaponry, because as long as we call it DU or depleted uranium, we discount the toxic and radioactive effect of it. So you're saying here, Doug, that this man ordered care for folks. Tell us about that.
Well, what had happened in December of 1992 as a result of the conference at Wright-Patterson in January of 1992, we got ordered to start the U.S. Army Environmental Policy Institute study on depleted uranium. Now, the Army Research Lab had already came after me, the Corps of Engineers had came after me, to sit on the team to do all the hazardous material stuff, which was also the burn pits and everything was a nightmare during Desert Storm, too. And General Franks had personally ordered me to go clean up the hazardous waste there with, again, another his G4. So we went and did it, and it turned into a nightmare. But as a consequence of starting the AEPI study, I was asked to do a staff study. And in this staff study, we completed it as part of my assignment at the 330th Medical Brigade as the executive officer for the 320th Veterinary Command, which is environmental. The vets take environmental in the Army. And we did that report, and as a consequence, General Shinseki, on August 13th of 1993, signed the order mandating medical care for all depleted uranium casualties, mandating that we develop the thorough training and everything, mandating that we develop the thorough environmental remediation to clean up all of the mess of DU, the radioactive weaponry, which is what it really is. And as a consequence, I went back on active duty as the director of the Depleted Uranium Project. Now, when Osagui came along, I'm down there as a director. They knew I'd been a part of Bauer's Raiders. We were the theater experts on this stuff. They had all our original reports. And when Osagui came on down, Bernard Rotzker, Mikey, everybody, Dave Case, everybody came on down there, General Prather, and we were at the chem school, and we started to prepare the actual report as it really happened. And the directive came on down to the chemical school, and I still got all the briefing papers, the slides, the originals, and the modified, that we had to lie on our reports in order to avoid liability and consequences for health and environmental effects. Now, that's exactly the same thing as Los Alamos memo that General Franks gave me, General Brown gave me, back in March of 1991. And I think most everybody has seen the Los Alamos memo today. It's out there, grassroots piece. It's on that. That's the old trap rock. You can pull it up. If not, we can give you the original copies of all this stuff. And what had happened is we were told flat out to alter our briefing to avoid all liability, and this is exactly what we're going to tell Bernard Rotzker and Mikey Kilpatrick. In other words, dumb it down. So that turned into a nightmare, and then once I finished the DU project, we developed all the medical stuff. We developed, from that Shinseki order, in our directive again, Colonel Pete Myers issued the medical care order for all uranium exposures in Somalia. And that was in October of 1993, because what had happened, we went to Somalia and shot the heck out of that place with DU munitions, structures, buildings, houses, cars, trucks, because the Somalis didn't have any armor. DU is incredible at everything. And so we did that. And again, very, very clear this whole time, develop it. So once I completed all of the training for the DU, radioactive weaponry, General Shinseki wrote the Army Regulation 700-48, wrote the pamphlet 700-48. Again, we revised the original TB 9-1300-278, which is all we had during Desert Storm, which was the techno bulletin on how to handle fires and clean up and medical and everything for DU. And then we did the common task training. Well, guess what? We finished this, and now by this time, General Shinseki is the chief of staff of the Army. 4 stars. So he's the one that signed it. If you pull up the regulation 700-48, the pamphlet, you will see his signature all over the place, making it mandatory. Section 2-4 of that regulation cites how to clean it up as a hazard. Don't do anything. Don't blow it up. You've got to clean it up. Section 2-5 mandates medical care. So Shinseki has had his fingers in DU from the get-go once I briefed him personally to his staff and get everything to him by his own order of ordering the health effects in August of 1993, signing the regulation mandating the training, mandating the environmental remediation, mandating medical care in 2002. Now, the other bad thing about it is the previous secretary of the VA before Shinseki was General Peake. Well, General Peake had also issued the medical care for DU back when he was a Surgeon General for the Army Medical Command. And so we have a whole litany of repeated people in the VA denying, delaying, and avoiding everything. So what has happened today, it's all coming out, but it's system-wide. First off, they deny that the exposures occurred. Next thing, they deny there were any health effects from the exposures, even though their internal documents, both within the military and the VA, totally confirm it. And then when the guys come into medical care, if you try to get a medical appointment and that breaks down, and what's happened to me over and over again, if you get a canceled appointment, not because of you, but because of them, you go back to the back of the queue, and then you wait until you get up there. So the number of people that have died as a direct result of denied medical care ordered by General Shinseki increases by the day. And I just, it bothers me since I originally, as you guys know, you have the documents, and Denise, you and I use all these documents. We wrote the report for the House Oversight Committee. That was what, in 2001?
No, it was before that because that was Congressman Shays and Congressman Burton's people.
Yeah, and then Bernie Sanders got directly in there, too.
Right.
Well, this brings us directly to the scandal of today. And that, of course, for the benefit of anyone who's not heard about this, the secretary of the VA, people are calling for his resignation now because it has been learned that we know this, of course, but now the larger public is beginning to learn about all of the unnecessary deaths caused by the manipulation of the VA for the sole purpose of denying care.
You know, the care that's required was well identified. Dr. Kang for the VA did a study, and this is published in the Journal of Environmental Medicine, volume 51, number 4, April of 2009. This is the signs and symptoms that they had confirmed for Gulf War illness. Functional impairment, way over 30%. Limitation of activities, right at 30%. People going to the hospital, 56% of everybody that served in Desert Storm was ill and needed to go in. Then we go into chronic fatigue, gastritis, depression, irritable bowel syndrome, emphysema, chronic bronchitis, repeated seizures, tachycardia, dermatitis, neurology, neuritis, strokes, bladder infections, cirrhosis of the liver, fibromyalgia, asthma, other endocrine disorders, diseases of all the genital organs, both male and female. Denise, you saw that day one. Coronary heart disease. Denise, you've been the loudest speaker on coronary heart effects and everything. Hepatitis, arthritis, diabetes, hypertension, other cancers, skin cancer, PTSD out of the beyond comprehension, anxiety disorder, high symptomatic symptom severity, major depression, panic disorder, depressive disorder, alcohol abuse, staggering alcohol abuse, taking meds for anxiety and everything, staggering. Multi-symptom illnesses and chronic fatigue syndrome-like illness, which is the, as all this stuff now, was it January of a year ago, IOM totally confirmed all of that stuff. And then the females, mood problems, miscarriages, Jesus. I mean, having difficulty getting pregnant. Denise, you've been a leading expert on the female problems. What were we seeing from day one and what's continuing?
Well, Doug, before we go further, I certainly want to give time if anybody's called in. So if anybody's called in, we want to hear your voices today. So speak up. We'll give you a couple of minutes. Just speak up.
If I could, if we've got
a couple Patricia,
of minutes.
Hey, Patricia, wait for him.
Nobody's there.
Okay. As far as the female issues, what we saw early on, even in theater, is we had females with uncontrollable menstrual cycles that were having to be sent back home to station, stateside, wherever. We had females, once they got home, that if they got pregnant, they had trouble carrying fetus to term. So they were having...
They were advised not to become pregnant. Women
right.
were advised not to become pregnant upon their
really
return back immediately.
Yeah, that word didn't get out as it should have. The same thing with donation of blood because it was schistosomiasis. Those directives did not come out and be publicized effectively. But the ones that did get pregnant, you know, had trouble carrying their fetus to term. Lots of birth defects early on. A lot of the research on, you know, we had a family registry back in the 90s. No one thought to get it extended in time. So it vanished from us. But all that data we now know, the VA has told us, all that data they had on wives or spouses and the children have been lost. They can't find it. Isn't that interesting?
Well, bear this in mind. It isn't only radioactive weaponry or so-called depleted uranium. It was the use of pyridoxine bromide, which was supposed to have been a pre-treatment for chemical warfare agents. In fact, it was only effective against Soman, but and is normally used for the treatment of myasthenia gravis. So it, if used with a healthy person, in a healthy person, is going to cause great injury, brain injury, and so forth. There was the exposure to chemical warfare agents as a consequence of used by Iraqis and all sides, I might add. There were the oil fires. There were all of the vaccinations. There was leishmaniasis. There were sand flies. There was the fact that the soldiers over there were being eaten alive by bugs, so they put DDT dog collars on them. There were a number of factors contributing to what has become known as Persian Gulf War illness, and all of the effects that Doug and you, Denise, are enumerating are all a consequence of all of these multiple exposures. And I maintain that what we need to do, while I think it's extremely important that we understand Persian Gulf War illness, which has been acknowledged as an ICD-9 code, I think it's extremely important, rather than to call it that for now, I think it's extremely important to address all of the symptomologies, break all of them down into ICD-9 codes, and therefore treat all of the symptoms and allow for all of the diagnostic protocols that this symptomology should call for. But this is not happening, period. This is not happening.
No,
we know that to be so.
The VA scandal right now, and, you know, we haven't heard about the Gulf War vets that stand in line with complaints of being needed to be checked for MS. We haven't had that study done, although it was supposed to be legislated by law. They have not done it. They have every excuse under the table of why they won't do it. But when we have vets showing symptoms and not getting MRIs or spinal taps done to rule that in or rule it out, that is just malpractice, as far as I can see.
But Denise, they can't even get a colonoscopy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is the condition of veterans today. I want to refer everyone who is listening to the, and this can be found online, I want to refer everyone to the memorandum that was issued April 26, 2010, by the Deputy Undersecretary for Health for Operations and Management. And it's titled Inappropriate Scheduling Practices, but it's much more than this. It is this memorandum which is at the heart of this scandal. And it is signed by a William Schoenhardt. This is a memorandum that he wrote in 2010 enumerating all of the various practices underway at all of the VAs which are denying and depriving care to veterans.
And the
this
GAO
same
has
person,
documented the
this
same thing.
Person, let me qualify this, if I might. This same person testified in 2013 before Congress stating, did not mention this at all, I might add, this memorandum, and stated, in fact, that conditions are improving, that the VA is improving. So I'm going to tell you right here and now that I call for the resignation and or the firing of Chinseki and all of his group. All of them need to be fired. And the reason they need to be fired is because they need to be held responsible for this. We've got to start somewhere. We know I've been a veteran advocate for longer than 25 years. And I know full well, going on to 30 years now, I know full well that I have fought for veterans tooth and nail, and I know that even as I fight for them, they're dying. I take on cases one by one. A veteran will come to me when he or she is at the end of his or her line. And sometimes they're suicidal. They're ready to kill themselves because they're so sick and they cannot get any care. And I will take on that case, and I'll go nose-to-nose with the VA, and I'll battle. I have filed complaints with the Inspector General's office, all to no avail. Now, when I do go nose-to-nose, I am successful, oftentimes, in getting care. But it is something that takes that kind of attention. And I'm not always successful, I can assure you of that, either.
It's already been documented this problem was known in the Bush administration.
Of course.
It's already briefed Obama. It's been documented in several GAO reports. The committees have been well aware of it. And it's a shame that it took this long to finally get public attention paid to it. And, you know, it's more than the wait time for, you know, consultations or for tests. It's the ability to get your doctor to order the appropriate test.
Well, you know, one of the problems it ran into, and this is from day one, I mean, this decision was made by Lieutenant General Ron Blanc, and I know, and Denise, you've had this conversation, Andres Carnegie Bath and Ron Blanc, they were family. I mean, personal, in the family, family, you know, official legal family. And Andres had tried to warn Ron Blanc when we were in Desert Storm back in December of 1990 of what was going to happen. And we all knew. And then, as you all know, I mean, it just turned into a nightmare. And all of us right there, I mean, Ron Blanc knew what was happening. He allowed his own family to go up in smoke where Andres died. And then Jim Runge died and all his other ones, Bill Orrell, all the guys right there that were with me and worked on directly on this, have all died. And the health status, I mean, like, you know, look on Herb Smith. You know, Herb's health status has been fragile at best for a long, long time. And that man with Andres and Tom and Jim Runge, and three out of four are dead, are the ones that did all the work on the investigations in Kuwait City and throughout Kuwait. I mean, Tom told me seeing the stuff when they were up there, with the wholesale bodies just being buried alive in the trenches by the Abrams tanks with the blades on them.
Understand something here, though, vis-a-vis following up with Denise and the fact that veterans cannot get appropriate diagnostic care. The reason, and or treatment, the reason they cannot do this is because the directors of these VAs are incentivized to deny care because they are given a yearly budget, and that percentage of the budget that they save is a bonus for them. They are making, some of them are making anywhere in bonuses from as much as $100,000, these people are making. And those bonuses are spread across upper management at every VA. That's what's going on. And in order to do this, always follow the money. In order to accomplish this, they were using, let me give you some idea of the practices that they have been using here. They are limiting and blocking appointment schedules. They are using, as we all know, you've heard they're using secret lists. They're creating appointments and then canceling them and making it seem as though the veteran has canceled the appointment, and you know that to be so, Doug. They are scheduling appointments that are so very far out that, in fact, by the time the veteran gets there, he or she is unfortunately in critical shape. This is what's going on. As I have said, unfortunately, repeatedly, this is not necessarily the fact that the money is not there. It is the fact that these greedy people are, in fact, eating up these resources. And also, bear in mind that of the VA budget, only a minimal percentage of that actually goes to health care, 25% of the budget that is dedicated to health care goes to administration. This is over and above that which is happening at the various VA hospitals. I'm talking about the upper administration. They have 300,000 people working for them. It's such extraordinary waste. Something must be done, but I fear, I'm going to tell you something, I'll be frank if you'll be earnest here, folks, I fear that this great ballyhoo that we're making right now, if we don't fire, if Chinseki and these folks don't understand that things have to change, if we don't get rid of all of them, if they don't suffer some consequences, then the next round of administrators that come forward will be doing the very same thing. This has been going on.
They've been doing it now under, going back for multiple VA secretaries. They definitely did it under General Peake. They did it under General Shinseki. But again, this was designed. What better than the guys that actually wrote the orders? I'm going to come back. General Peake, who was previous secretary of the VA, also personally signed an order mandating medical care for depleted uranium.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, two VA secretaries signed the direct orders, and then they deny the individual exposures. What we're seeing over and over again is, and I ran this point blank, I knew what we did, I knew what happened because we were right there. When we went to get our post-deployment physical assessment form, after deployment, they didn't do it right. They denied it, and then when you went looking for them after they did them and they were supposed to put in your records, it all disappeared. We know the medical records from theater were absolutely put into a Connex at 3rd MedComp. We know that they disappeared because when the medical staff, the doctors that were good, went to open up the Connex, it was empty, just empty, totally empty. It's astonishing.
Well, my concern is not so much the top of the chain. I don't think he's being communicated with well, and that's part of his problem. But I would look at the level below him, like the people that have been coming to the RAC meetings and just sitting there and pretty well ignoring the RAC. Dr. Jesse has been there. Other, I would call them mid-level up at headquarters that have been blocking anything to help Gulf War veterans at all. Dr. Davey. These are people that are not at the top of the chain, but right below him. And, you know, either they're not communicating like they should to their boss and having conferences of how to solve the problem. They're not bringing it to him. Something is terribly sick in the system. And it's not just Shinseki. It's, you know, the level of the hospital administrator. It's the level of the people at VA headquarters that are maybe two steps down.
I couldn't disagree with you more, my dear. He must be fired. He must be fired. He must be fired as an example. If he's not aware of this, I can assure you that this memorandum was written in 2010. The memorandum that is the subject of this enormous exposé was written in 2010, and it went to every vision director, detailing every means and ways that is now the subject of great discussion. If he wasn't aware of it, then he's either bloody well brain dead, or he's chosen to stick his head in the sand. Either way, either by omission or commission, he is wholly and entirely culpable. That's a cabinet position. He's in a position of extraordinary responsibility, and on top of which, he was specifically hired to change the culture of the VA. He promised he would change the culture of the VA. He came in singing and dancing and stating that he is going to make great changes. I tell you, this man must be held culpable, and all of them must be held culpable. And this memorandum that I am pointing out to you, written by William Schoenhardt, this memorandum detailing very precisely all the means and ways of denying care, denying access to care, denying diagnostics, denying everything that might contribute to the health of Veterans, in great detail, I might add, came out in 2010. And again, I point out to you, he issued this in 2010. Now, I can assure you, this was known years before. This is a multi-page memorandum. There was a tremendous decision to make this.
I'm not fighting you on that, but I'm saying that there's more problems in the VA headquarters and across this nation than just one person that is a cabinet level.
Of course that's true.
And I think we need to find out what all the problems are and clean it out.
Well,
yeah, that's the problem.
If you take a look at each and every VA, you will see that every VA is employing these tactics. This isn't an isolated incident. I've worked with veterans all over the country, And these veterans from all over the country have a difficult time. Now, you know that to be true, Doug.
Yeah, they have
a difficult time getting care.
Absolutely, but it comes down to it's all the way through the system, just like Denise said. We've got the individuals below Shinseki. I mean, definitely I can name by name because I had, you know, senior leaders, two or three levels below Shinseki that I've one-on-one with, and it's just lying through the teeth. So we know who those people are. They're creating the problems. So, again, it comes back to this entire invasive problem. Deny that the complex toxic exposures on the battlefield have any health and or environmental effects, we can avoid liability. Deny at everything else that what they know is PTSD, that they try to treat with psychotropics, is an incredible problem, an ethical morality crisis within them, because we've got to come back to it. Since Vietnam, and we all bought into that, Denise and I were into the Vietnam era, particularly you were on the outside, but still working with everybody, and what we saw is we were lied to about what Vietnam was. We did all of that. Then Desert Storm comes. We're flat out lied about Desert Storm. And we see this all the way continuously through. So there is nothing, when you have an ethical moral crisis, psychotropic drugs do not get away with it. On my guys, team members, my best friend comes in here, Vietnam, the Desert Storm, and beyond. And what they do is they put all these drugs into you, and then what happens? Your memory disappears. Or the other problem is you're so dumbed on down that you're living in a numb life. And then all of this stuff, I mean, the incredible numbers. Deese and I gave up counting the number of times you and I have intervened throughout the night, throughout 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, with these guys that are totally flustered that get suicidal or everything, or then start drinking alcohol and go into crisis, or use prescription drugs beyond what they're supposed to go into crisis, or they go out and use street drugs. And, geez, Denise, I mean, the whole system is rotten from the inside because
it
of the myth
rotten.
Has to be sustained.
Well, we've got about 15 minutes left, guys. I'd like to give an opportunity for anybody that's called in to be able to have their voice heard. Do we have anybody on the line? Please speak up.
I'd like to, if I might.
Patricia, wait a minute. Is anybody there, ladies and gentlemen? Now's your opportunity. Call in, speak up. 888-874-4888. Now, we'll wait a minute or so here.
Doug, as I mentioned to you while we're waiting to see if anyone's there, a listener has emailed a poem which she would like read as a tribute to our veterans.
Please do.
And her name is Pauline Partridge. I confess to you that she's a dear, good friend of mine, and she's a sister under the skin. And she has penned a poem that I think is absolutely ideal for Memorial Day to honor our veterans. She wrote this as a tribute to Chief Master Sergeant John Gebhardt, Superintendent of the 22nd Wing Medical Group at McConnell Air Force Base in Kansas. And she states that while stationed at Balad Air Base in Iraq, U.S. Air Force Theater Hospital, to oversee operations, he saw an injured Iraqi child shot in the head and unable to sleep and crying and sobbing. He picked her up and he sat in the chair with her all night long. And he held this little child to his chest. And there is a picture of him holding this little girl to his chest, comforting her. He held her all night long. And when she learned of that, Pauline Partridge is her name, Pauline E. Partridge, for anyone who's interested in looking her up, she wrote this poem, and it is entitled Gun Wounded Child Soothed to Sleep. After all her folk shot dead, they shot her too, in the head. Nurses couldn't soothe crying, orphaned child near to dying. John Gebhardt shows he does care. 4 nights spent asleep in chair, moaning child held on his chest. Quiet, loving heals the best. And that's by Pauline E. Partridge, P-A-R-T-R-I-D-G-E. And Chief Master Sergeant John Gebhardt is a 30-year veteran. He joined the Air Force in 79. He's had 2 tours, and he served in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Iraq. He's currently with the Loveland Police Department in Kansas. So, Chief Master Sergeant John Gebhardt, wherever you are, hats off to you, sir. And Pauline Partridge, thank you for sending this. And I pray that everyone understands that while certainly the worst of all comes out at war, the best comes out, too. And this is a beautiful expression of humanity.
Do we have anybody online that speak up now, please? Denise, your turn.
My turn. Well, you know, I have an article here, and I've posted it on my own Facebook page that talks about how the bonuses have gone out. And I think it's the top 200 or so bonuses by name, who got them, and which facility. So that's very educational to know what's going on, and it'd be interesting to compare that with the facilities that are being audited and investigated right now. I really think the bonus system needs to be put a halt to, at least for a time being, until the corrections are made, because I wonder, you know, so much money is being given out to the bonus system, and they say this is a way to keep good doctors in the system. I think they need to reevaluate that process and how that is judged. And it needs more oversight for sure than just VA handing out these bonuses.
Why should anybody even get any pay at all when they fail to do their job?
Yeah.
I mean,
they don't
deserve
bonuses.
You know,
they're
getting paid to fail.
I can see some of them if they're top in their field and they could make a lot more money in the civilian world. I could see some selective ones to recruit really highly qualified neurologists, neurosurgeons, you know, oncology specialists. I could see some of this, but to see the whole list of what's giving out, you know, I'd have to go research each person and say, you know, are they really worth that besides
yeah,
their salary?
The doctors aren't getting the bonuses. It is the directors. It is the vision directors. It is
the
hospital directors.
Doctors
are getting it, too.
Well, they're getting their bonuses for denying treatment is why they're getting their bonuses.
Well, we have a lot of problems, and I think that my feeling is, you know, if Shinseki's going to take the heat, let us fully investigate the VA, and if he fixes it, I give him a limited time. If he doesn't take positive steps in fixing this, then yes, he should be fired.
You know,
it's gotten worse under his tenure. It's gotten worse under his... He's not going to fix it.
But what I'm saying... Patricia, is you cannot blame the one guy at the top. It comes from every level. And that's what we need to find out is who at each level is doing disservice to the veterans.
We've all been to appointments, and again, I've got individuals that come to me in the last few days. They've been to appointments, and some of these guys have died. And what happened is their doctor said there were no toxic exposures. I don't want to look at your reports. This did not happen. There are no physiological effects from depleted uranium or PB or the L wildfires or the hazmat, the burn pits. And yet we have the internal documents, Department of Defense documents, internal Army documents, internal VA documents, that thoroughly confirm all the health effects that they're denying happens to the patient, to deny, delay, and give them ineffective care. Again, it's budget. They don't have enough money, because once they open the can of worms, it's doing, and we got to remember, Vietnam veteran Agent Orange casualties are still fighting in court to get their mandated medical care. And we know they were there. And then what has happened here at Chinook Air Force Base, the guy that did it sprayed the Agent Orange. The Air Force uses semantics and said, he didn't do it. Wait a minute, he didn't do it. Well, there's nothing there that says we can't find the documents. Well, Denise, you and I hopefully know, Patricia, we know, documents existed, and the documents were destroyed, whether it was individual health records or the other reports. And what they don't count on is a whole group of dedicated veterans and lower command, lower staff members, not up at the command staff that should be yelling and screaming, kept the documents, and that bothers us completely. I mean, I come back down, why are not the unit commanders, why are not the corps commanders, brigade commanders, why are not the Army commanders? Why haven't all these guys stood up to yell and scream to help us get the medical care? I never see any of them. I mean, we had Andres and Tom and Herb. They were the only full colonels that I knew of. We had one female equivalent, she was a light colonel. But other than that, it's a whole bunch of lower-ranking NCOs and a handful of us that were, you know, junior field grade officers yelling and screaming at the top of our lungs. What's wrong with the system when the commanders don't even acknowledge what has happened to step up and say, well, I'm going to make sure the guy gets medical care. He was under my care. I'm going to make sure he gets medical care. It happened to me because we knew what happened. My command surgeon denied my line of duty. Basically, no, well, you weren't there. Well, yeah, you were there. Go get for medical care. You're hot. But no, nobody's hot. Duh.
I'll tell you something. In the early days, and Denise, you know this as well. In the early days, people in the VA, there were, and, you know, let's make something clear. There are some very good people in the VA, people I've talked to, people who I've worked with, people who are frustrated and know the truth and want to do the right thing.
Patricia, we got a caller. Please come on, please, whoever you are, identify and help us.
Hey, Doug, Gabe Rivera from endthedrugwartoday.com. Glad to talk to you, try and help whatever way I can.
Yeah, hey, Dave, it's your Gabriel. You've got the last few minutes. Please speak up and give us help.
You know, Doug, I originally spoke with you probably back in 2002 on the Kucinich campaign. You were at near Portland State University talking about, you fell over actually off as you were coming off the stage talking about the radiation, the low-level radiation stuff. And I feel like we're even further behind now than we were then. And if you study Nazi Germany, what Hitler did was actually just get the high-level decent German officers to kill themselves. And we're in a worse position in the United States of America. You're describing complete lack of moral oversight, complete lack of oversight, yet there's no structure by which we're going to correct this at this point.
I agree.
What do you think we need to do, David?
Gabriel, and what I think we do need to do is start organizing. You know, we're in a war. How long do I have Doug Rocky with me? How long do I have Michael Rupert with me? How many more of these people are going to fall by the wayside where I don't even have you as a resource? And why haven't all those resources been linked up in a way to where everybody that's in the United States military goes to jail? Because the criminals that are in jail are nothing by comparison.
Boy, that says a lot, doesn't it? We've gone to war without justification. We've killed, destroyed, and contaminated without justification. We refused to clean up the environmental contamination, even though it was directed, and the order to do so, the Army Regulation, is signed by General Shinseki personally. I mean, you're right. I mean, it's horrid. All over the world, and yet we ignore it. I think that's a reason so many of us have such ethic and moral crisis. I mean, God almighty. I mean, it's beautiful out in Portland. I remember that was so wonderful out there, and I wasn't there long enough.
No, and I hope you keep to your health, and I'm glad that you're still doing this, and I'll call back in. Let's keep at this and stay at this. Keep with your health, and I really appreciate what you're doing, Doug.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Yeah, Denise, I mean, you've been fighting this from day one. You were in there and you saw the problems when we were in the theater. You saw the problems when we got back from the theater. You've been going to all of the RAC meetings. You've been going to hearings. What is the overall census that takes people to do this? I mean, what do you perceive?
Well, you know, it comes down to activating every citizen and every family member and every veteran. We've got to bring our voices out. I mean, the VA secretary put out on his blog, and he's gotten quite a few comments and replies. I have been reposting that blog address so people could go in and make their replies to his letter that he put out this weekend. And the Gulf War vets aren't speaking up. Here they have a place they could reply directly to the secretary. You know that blog is out in the public, and the media is probably watching it to see what is said by the veterans. I try to post articles with the journalist's name right there that they can email the journalists if they're in their area to get in touch with them, have more media coverage. It is going to take raising every voice we can to get this situation taken care of. It's been going on 24 years now. And, you know, I know you and I have both gotten very tired. We've taken phone calls. We've helped on suicide calls in the middle of the night. You know, it's going to take the army of people to make a difference.
You once said that we had to mobilize God's army. What did you mean by that? You said that at IOM meeting.
I think that we have to activate churches. We have to activate teachers, our kids that go to school. They need to hear the veterans and get the teachers involved also in having class projects to write a letter, get journalists involved. I mean, this is every single person's obligation. It's not just falls on the veteran who is fighting for their care, but it falls on their family, their extended family, their neighbors. You know, a church that they go to could become involved. Hear their stories and get upset and take action. I mean, when we really flood elected officials, the president, the secretary, flood the media, that's when it will happen. Just like this scandal, it's been going on for years, decades, over a decade. And finally, we get attention by the media. I mean, you know, it takes everybody raising their voice and saying, this has got to stop.
You know, I know President Obama, when he was Senator Obama from the state of Illinois, was totally, completely briefed. Because U.S. Congressman for the 15th District, Tim Johnson, briefed him with all of our input. I mean, all three of us were involved in that. So that's totally confirmed. Obama knew while back in 2007, 2008, 2005, while he was a U.S. Senator. And then at the beginning, he said he didn't know, but he's always known because the briefing papers are there and we got all the controlled information.
And the other thing is we've got to stop them from letting it be a political show. This cannot be Democrat, Republican, Tea Party. It has to be every one of them.
It never should have been that, but that's what it was. And even doesn't matter who they are from what I've seen, doesn't matter Republican, Democratic, Green Party, Liberal, whatever, they're all ignoring the reality of the health and environmental effects to sustain the myth of what the U.S. is and what we're out there to do and what the consequences of our actions. God, I just get sicker and sicker.
Patricia, I want to thank you for being involved. And we met back at that NIH conference. And people don't, you know, until you started coming on the show, I don't think they knew all about you. And we'll have to go through your curriculum vitae at another program. But it's been people like you. I know Leah Steele, I think, was at that NIH meeting. Quite a few of the civilian people stood up for us then and have continued to try to help us.
Thank you again, Gary Noel. God bless you, Gary. You've done the best documentary on all this out there. People, go to GaryNoel.com and get the documentary. Thank you, and God bless.